Hey, this is Casual Wednesdays. I'm Jared Jones. It's hard to believe, but this little podcast of ours has been at it for well over a year. That's especially hard to believe considering all the time we've taken off. And sorry about that, by the way. But a little over a year ago, we did an episode, a really fun episode, that focused on the comics we couldn't live without. Like, if we were shipped off to live on a desert island for the rest of our lives, presumably drinking out of coconuts and slowly succumbing to sunstroke, and we could only bring one comic book with us, a series, a book, a miniseries, whatever, what would it be? MJ and I both reached deep and settled on two choices, and yes, we got two because it's our show. But it always bugged us that we couldn't pick more. You can go back and listen to it either here or on iTunes. It's episode 8, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, MJ picked Sandman and Phonogram, and I picked Love and Rockets and Preacher, of course, and we had a stack of like three more books each. Or probably more, knowing us. And since comics news has been pretty damn grim these days, and since it's been well over a month since we brought you an episode of Casual Wednesdays, we thought, what the hey, let's do another episode, just like the one last year. Maybe make it an annual thing, you never know. So this week, Desert Island Picks Part 2. Then we'll share our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week, read listener comments towards the end of the show, and assess Bloodshot Salvation number 1 and America number 7. It's Wednesday, September 20th. Happy New Comic Book Day. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays. Oh, what is that? What is that, the sun? What is that, the sun looking at us right now?
Well, yeah.
Well,
it's,
yeah.
It's the morning time.
I don't like the morning time. I hate the morning time. What are we doing?
It is strange to be recording in the morning instead
of at
night. As
opposed to late at night, yeah. Mm-hmm. But here we are. Anyway, hello everyone. Welcome to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I am your host, Jared Jones. And with me, as always, is the Kyle Rayner to my Hal Jordan, Molly Jane Kramer. Hello, Mel.
Why am I Kyle and not Guy?
Because you're objectively cooler.
But red hair. Red hair.
But Guy Gardner's an asshole.
Guy Gardner's pretty good. If you should read the Peter Tomasi, the Emerald Warrior, is that what it was called? It was a series that he did the core, and then he did an Emerald Warrior series that was pretty much just Guy.
So well after the actual Guy Gardner Warrior stuff.
Right? Oh, yes.
Oh.
It might be the Brightest Day era.
Oh, okay. So like, what was he? He was a nice guy?
Well, I mean, he was a Red Lantern for a tiny bit of it.
Spew blood. What jerks?
Well, it's not really blood. It's kind of like napalm blood.
Napalm blood?
It was a good series anyway, and yeah. I'm okay with Guy Gardner.
Well, okay, then fine. You'll always be Kyle Rayner to me.
Okay.
We are back after an extended hiatus. Sorry about that, folks. Life got in the way, but we have returned. If you're still here, if you're still listening after all this time off, we thank you. Thanks for sticking with us. We're back on track as of this week. In the meantime, though, we decided to ease into this.
Our return.
Our return. Thank you. It's so early. It's so early. I don't know if I'm going to make it. I still got to edit this thing. Oh my God, it's Wednesday. So we decided to revisit an old episode idea we had a year ago, September of last year. It's hard to believe this podcast is over a year long.
And it's funny that it was almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah. So we're back to it. Desert Islands Picks Part 2, where we are going to discuss the comics we absolutely will not live without, not even if the circumstances of our survival depended on it. I don't know what I'm saying. So MJ, let's start off with a pick from you. What is your first ever Desert Island pick of 2017?
Well, my first one for our last year's show on this topic is still my go-to pick, but I'm not going to talk about it that much, but Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Sandman would be my number one. It's probably my most reread comic.
Yeah.
But the other one that popped into my brain first was JSA.
Justice Society of America.
Yeah. And there were a couple runs of it in like the it's like mid-2000s. Started off being written by James Robinson and David Goyer and Jeff Johns, and then continued on without Robinson and then without Goyer, and then it was just Johns for a very long time.
And how many volumes are there in total?
I think there's like 10 and 10. or close to that.
So you've got all three, you've got three omnibuses, an omnibi, JSA yeah. omnibi here. Does that encapsulate the entire run?
Yes, it's got both series in it. Mm. I also have trades of all of it, and then I also have
the single issues.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of stuff yeah. still.
I repeat collect. If you're trapped, deserted on a desert island all by yourself, that would be both a great read and a very depressing one.
So, like, that's just, like, a long series. Like, so much stuff happened in between there. Like, I'm trying to think, because I've only read peripheral issues, I think.
I'm making you read this one day, the whole thing.
Oh, it's going to happen.
I'm going to make you sit there and just...
Just sit there and...
Burn through those omnibuses.
Like, under threat of death?
Yes. Well, I'm just going to stand there and stare down.
I'm going to read it anyway. You don't have to threaten my life. It's fine. I'm a DC fanboy. I'm an easy sell on this. But
I am surprised that you haven't read it, though, because of that.
Well, I have read a few. I read during the Kingdom crossover with Justice yes. League of America, Brad Meltzer's run. Mm-hmm.
Meltzer doing the...
The JLA issues.
Yeah, because it was a little crossover there when they brought the Legion... back in. It's like the second or third time we're bringing the Legion back.
Well, I was talking about the bit where the Kingdom Come Superman uh-huh. comes into the DCU. Uh-huh. Is that the same one? I don't remember the Legion being in that.
It's they bring back a couple of the Legionnaires. But yeah, the Kingdom Come Superman being in there was so good.
That was kind of, I wasn't really reading comics right around that time. This was when my off period where I was too cool to read comics for some stupid reason, but like Kingdom Come was still one of my favorite stories, and to see him in the actual DCU, I was like, the hell is this? I gotta read this.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Kingdom Come Superman being a part of actual DC continuity, but Watchmen being in the DCU is a bridge too far. Aren't I a hypocrite?
Well, I think that Kingdom Come is actually based on DC characters, whereas Watchmen was like a...
Charlton character.
Yeah, weird version of the Charlton ones.
Yeah. Isn't that weird that... Both were written by Johns. He had a solid grasp of the character of the Kingdom Come Superman that I really appreciated. But mm-hmm. I also enjoyed like the banter and just how the characters mixed while I was reading those tie-in issues. So it did stand out mm-hmm. even before I really knew who Geoff Johns was at mm-hmm. the time. I knew that I was reading something special. So yeah, I get it. JSA yeah. all the way.
And also in the earlier run, they have a lot more like... villains on the team, sort of like reformed villains. Oh. So that slightly X-Men sort of feel with like Black Adam being on the team was like, well, you know, trying to get him to be like,
he
no.
He was a tyrant.
But he was a good guy for a little bit there.
So why they just were like, eh, the people he killed, it's fine.
He hadn't killed that many people that yet. Many people. He was kind of reformed. And then the whole thing with Black Adam mm-hmm. in the first run of that series was amazing. To write Black Adam more in 52,
right,
and then also in the second Justice Society run as well. He has a couple characters that he's really stuck with and just developed to the point of like, oh man, I can't believe all this shit has happened to this character.
It's yeah, when I was awesome. Reading 52, I felt like I was missing out on a big chunk of Black Adam's backstory.
Yeah, reading all of JSA definitely gives you more of the you know, the background.
Yeah, all right, I've got to read this thing. Jesus, add it to the list.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. What is your first pick for our Desert Island Comics this week, Jared?
So last year I talked about, let's see, I talked about Love and Rockets,
mm-hmm.
And then I talked about Preacher. Mm-hmm. So people listening this year who giving us shit for not talking about these comics, we already did it in the yeah. previous episode. Go back and listen to it. But we ended up going over long on that episode and didn't have time to talk about one of my all-time favorite comics. I would be buried with this if I actually believed in burial. But
you could be cremated with it, but I don't want to burn that book.
No, don't burn this. All-Star Superman. But yeah,
it's very pretty.
I love Grant Morrison's work. I think that his DCU work is the best stuff that he's ever done. I'm sure that he might not agree with me.
I think a lot of people would agree with you. He's certainly done more for DC than for Marvel. He is a divisive figure, though. There are some people... like us, who really dig him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some people who just... some people just don't want to be challenged that much. If that doesn't sound too pretentious, I'm sorry. But some people just don't want to read the Grant Morrison. They find his logic a little too twisty.
Well, his logic may be twisty, but if there is a writer out there that is totally adept at world building and constructing universes, multiverses, even, under one narrative, it's him.
Oh, I agree.
DC is still strip mining Morrison's run from when he was from the time he was writing Animal Man all the way to Multiversity. Like, yeah. Scott Snyder's Metal is totally in debt to Grant Morrison's run.
I was actually just thinking regarding Metal and just Batman in general, how I think I mentioned before how the recent Batman runs to me, I haven't enjoyed as much because they're more about what is the Batman about?
Yeah.
What is the Batman as opposed to just being a Batman story?
Yeah.
And Grant Morrison was able to tell a story that was a fun, just goofy-ass Batman yarn. Yeah. And also tell a story that was about what Batman is. Both at the same time. And I don't think anyone has been able to do that since he did.
Definitely not since. I mean, there are certainly creators that have prior to him. I mean, there were creators that informed Grant Morrison's trajectory, mm-hmm. like Archie mm-hmm. Goodwin. But I think what makes Grant Morrison stand out so much in my mind is that he does strike that balance, as you said, that like he can tell a story about a character that gets underneath the nails of the character, but without being obvious about it, without having these portentous captions about what it means to be a hero in the dark, or what duality does he share with his ruby-lipped villain. Morrison knows how to just, like, keep it even and tell a really thrilling story in the meantime. That's what All-Star Superman is.
Yes.
As a Superman lifer, reading All-Star Superman for me was, like, this transcendent experience I didn't think I could still have reading comics. And I certainly haven't had since I've read this.
So were you reading comics when that came out?
All-Star Superman is what brought me back. I mean, I was still buying comics here and there. What lured me back into this, like, well, I have to start buying this every month, I guess, was All-Star Superman.
And it did come out every month for a while, and then it got kind of late.
It got super late. I mean, it's Frank Quitely's fault. I mean, I guess we can give Grant Morrison some blame. He's not always, like, 100% on time, but...
See, he's got some good art. Takes a while to make it.
It's will wait years for a good Frank Quitely story. His art is worth it, and his art in All-Star is... probably the most impressive that he's done to me. Like,
oh, I agree.
Because Morrison's playing with all these out there concepts. He's playing with the shifting timelines and these parallel universes and the multiverse. And then, of course, he's compounding almost 20 years worth of DCU lore that he wrote himself and compressing it into this 12-issue maxi-series. It keeps it laser-focused on what Superman is, what he means to the world, and why he's so damn important, why he endures as a character. Especially in the comics medium. And it's moving in a way. Yeah. Like DC Animation tried to make a movie out of this, which was a fool's errand right from the start. When they announced it, I was like, good luck. Because you can't stick a landing like All-Star Superman has without the years that preceded it. Like, you have to have like the headspace for it in order for it to hit as hard as it does. And that's what All-Star Superman did for me, is like reading Superman comics from like the Silver Age, the Golden Age, the Modern Age. And just having all these different facets of the character blend into this one pure version of him, mm-hmm. and then have him go through like the last days of his life. Like, that's tough to read.
Yeah.
So MJ, let's move it back to you.
To avoid making this a DC fest, because I'm looking at my list here and it's almost all DC.
My second pick's a DC.
Yeah. Well, I have like 6 or 7 things in here. It's all DC.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put something else on here, and something else is a little bit more recent.
Oh.
It is Thor. By Jason Aaron.
Aaron Thor run, yes.
And it's more than just, because if you're reading Thor, or what is right now called the Mighty Thor,
mm-hmm.
You know this is the third Thor series that Jason Aaron has been writing, because they have relaunched it three times.
But it's all the same story still.
It's the same story. It's Thor herself has changed from being himself, but it is the same story pretty much. And a lot of people, if they come into my shop, they'll be like, yeah, I want to read the new Thor. And I have to be like, kind of be like, well, I mean, even if you do want to read current Lady Thor, you really kind of should start with Thor, God of Thunder, because it's one narrative, and you get so much more out of it if you read it from the start.
It's true. However, I feel that like if you were to just start like dive right in the middle of it,
no,
you're
not
going to get super lost.
Yeah, but the first volume of Thor, God of Thunder, which is where the series starts,
mm-hmm.
is such a cool story about the nature of gods, the nature of religion, the nature of stories. Doesn't happen in Thor comics that often. Like, they don't
Which is interesting.
they really don't delve into the idea of religion, but Aaron really goes all in on the concept of gods
and how they're worshipped.
Yeah, and just like what is a god? What is a god worth? Are gods or religion good for their subjects.
You got me into this Thor run. You had me read the first 12 issues, I think, when it was still called God of Thunder.
And the God Killer,
and then the God Bomb. And that story threw me for a loop because I had read my fair share of Thor comics as a kid, and they were, you know, really huge and bombastic and had a scale befitting the God of Thunder, yada, yada, yada. But those two stories scared me in a way that I didn't think that they were going to.
Oh, because yeah, they're very chilling in their way.
It's
yeah.
like, there's a being out there that can kill gods. And it's like, yeah, I've read that a dozen times, but like this guy really has an agenda. Like, he wants to eradicate the sense of hope and love that gods can give people.
Aaron does this great thing where he splits it up into three separate narratives within that story, with the Thor of the current day, and then this future King Thor, where Thor has lost an arm and lost an eye, looking a little bit like Odin, has three awesome daughters running around too. Mm-hmm. And then there is also like past Thor, who's like still hanging out in the Viking era.
That stuff was crazy.
Drinking like crazy, mm-hmm. romancing ladies, warring with Vikings, you know, answering various, you know, Vikings' prayers and going in and fighting with them. It is so good. And Esad Ribic's art, especially in that first storyline,
yeah.
it's like being inside a heavy metal album. It is wondrous. And that's only just like the first segment of it. Like once it switches over into being Lady Thor, I'm not going to say who Lady Thor is because the first portion of the Lady Thor storyline,
it's a mystery,
is literally who is Thor. With that storyline and then following on, Russell Dowderman and Matt Wilson take over on the art.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell Dowderman's art is phenomenal.
It is.
He is one of the best artists working in superheroes today. Matt Wilson's colors improve it even that much more. And Matt Wilson won an Eisner this year.
Yeah.
Partially for his work on Thor, because it's so out of this world crazy. But that book, every time I read it, every month, it's like, this is the best superhero book on the stands. The best superhero book being published right now in 2017.
And I can't really argue with that because I've read enough of it. I'm behind. I am definitely
behind. I know
behind
you're behind.
But from what I've read, I mean, Jason Aaron not only is a master of his craft, but this guy...
He's my favorite.
He gets the Marvel Universe, he gets why Thor is important in it, and he gets why sometimes the two need to be separated so Thor could tell his own stories.
Or her own stories.
Or her own stories, precisely right.
I'm just... I live in fear of the day that the news comes out, oh, Jason Aaron's leaving Thor.
Well, he's leaving Star Wars.
He is, and he's been on Thor longer than Star Wars. Like, mm-hmm. It feels like Thor is kind of his baby and he really wants to stay with it and see it through the long haul. So I worry that one day he's going to leave.
He's still exclusive to Marvel. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, but he might decide he wants to tell some other story. It's a transcendent experience. Especially bits that take place in like Jotunheim or whatever would be a good desert island pick because it would kind of like cool you off seeing all that ice and stuff being on your like sweaty, sunny palm tree island. Yeah. What is your next pick for your Desert Island comic?
My second pick is Batman Black and White. I'm specifically picking the first volume of stories, primarily because when I was a kid, they really got into my brain. Like, some of these stories are still in there. Like, I think about them a lot. Like, there's this one by Bruce Timm that talks about Harvey Dent and Two-Face. And Bruce Timm's artwork, he does like to luxuriate in cheesecake. And he does so in this story. But he also knows how to tell like an atmospheric noir tale. He does it in the Batman animated series style. It looks like storyboards to an episode that never got made. And it probably wouldn't have gotten made considering the subject matter. I mean, there's nudity, there's drinking, there's serious violence. Like all the...
You mean characters actually die?
People actually die in the story. But then there's another story by Ted McKeever. And it's like this, you know, detective procedural where Batman comes into a morgue and there's this woman's body and she's been murdered and he's trying to get to the bottom of how she got there. So he's like giving her an autopsy and he's searching for clues on her person and he develops a narrative in his mind. And McKeever writes in this like sort of poetic way, balances like the lyricism in his captions with like what's on the panels, how Batman comes to learn about this woman and about who she was and what happened to her. It's unsettling, but it's also beautiful. And that it's like in this really short, like 8-page comic is remarkable. Which is interesting is that it's the first story in black and white. So that's just how you enter into it. You get stories from Joe Kubert. You get stories from Howard Chaykin, whatever that's worth to you. You get a story written by Archie Goodwin, which is awesome. Some by Walter Simonson. Bill Sienkiewicz wrote one that was just amazing. Like, his artwork is, I mean, that's in my top five always and forever. But he's also kind of a really good writer, too. And he tells the story about, like, child abuse, where Batman's, like, on the rooftops on, like, a snowy winter night. And he hears this father berating his child for keeping kittens on a rooftop. And he's like, what did I tell you about keeping these damn cats here, and I don't have money to feed these things, and this little boy, this tiny, and he draws them with his little cherubic face, and he's like, but Dad, they're kittens, and I want to keep them alive. And it's really sad, and it's really touching, and he uses snowflakes as a visual motif, and just the way they drift and move on, and like how the son looks at his father after the whole scenario's over. He looks at his dad in a completely different way, and it's not in a flattering way, and Batman moves on with his life, and as these two events are occurring, snow keeps drifting past both of them, and it just, like, it's arresting. And it's stories like that that make me want to read comic books. I love it to death. So Batman Black and White, Volume 1, would be a desert island pick. We are going to jump forward into their top five, but before we do, MJ, did you have anything to add?
No, I just, but like you just said, this is a lot of superhero stuff, and would like to acknowledge that we do like more than superhero stuff.
We
it's
do.
Just this is the stuff that, you know, floats on the surface that we really, really, really do love.
Yeah, this is comfort food for us, and considering the month that we've just had, we could use a little comfort food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we move forward to talk about comic books that came out this week, potential future Desert Island picks. Who knows? Who can say? Let's get down to it. The top five most anticipated issues of the week. MJ, we're going to start you off. What do you got first?
Well, my first pick for this week is Doctor Strange number 25. Currently, Dennis Hopeless is writing Doctor Strange.
Mm.
And there were just a couple, Secret Empire, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
A couple Secret Empire tie-ins that I didn't read.
Mm-hmm.
But now the writer on this issue is not Dennis Hopeless, it is John Barber. I don't know who that is.
Never heard.
It's not a name I know. But the art in here is Kevin Nolan and Juan Frigueri.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Juan Frigueri really well.
Mm-hmm.
But 15 pages of Kevin Nolan is always great.
Yeah.
There are so many inkers that worked on this with him.
I believe
Scott Hanna, Dexter Vines, Mark Morales, Terry Pallett, Tom Palmer, and Dan Brown.
What?
At least one of those. I think Dan Brown is the colorist.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's a lot.
Those are also some of Marvel's like top-notch inkers, like Mark Morales and Dexter Vines. Awesome,
dudes. Oh, yeah.
But it still looks gorgeous. I can't wait to read it. What is your first pick?
For me, we're going to start off over an Aftershock, a non-superhero book, just so I can cleanse my palate. This is Dark Arc number 1. I don't know anything about it. I haven't read the synopsis. All I know is that the artwork by Juan Doe is spectacular.
And Cullen Bunn is pretty good at that horror stuff. And I think it's like a Cthulhuan take on like Noah's Ark.
That's what it looks like. But the fact that Cullen Bunn's collaborating with Juan Doe, that's as Aftershock as it gets. You've got Juan Doe, who did American Monster with Brian Azzarello, and probably still will. I'm not sure if that story's actually resolved. I haven't finished it.
And he was doing The Animosity, The Rise with Marguerite Bennett as
That's
well.
Right. And Cullen Bunn, who's also doing
Unholy Grail.
Unholy Grail, and he's not doing
75% of every other book.
Yeah, I feel like he's writing
by everybody.
I don't know why I feel like he's writing 20 Aftershock titles, but like he's definitely writing 20 other titles.
He writes maybe one more for Aftershock. He's a very prolific dude.
I don't know how he does it.
Horror is his best stuff. His best stuff is creepy as fuck. And that shit looks real creepy.
Mm-hmm. What drew me in was the cover itself. I mean, like, the Cullen Bunn, obviously, old hat when coming up with high concepts that will, like, immediately hook you. But to have an artist like Juan Doe, like, this is a blood red cover with, like, and it's, like, faded and it looks like it's coming through some sort of mist, and I feel like I'm just sucked in by it. Like there's an art with like this weird goat skull on it, and you got tentacles breaching the surface of the water underneath, and it's just like, what the hell is going on here? I have to read this. I haven't been this pumped about an Aftershock title in at least 6 days. So I'm here now. Dark Arc number one from Aftershock's my first pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
All right, my next one is also shying away from superhero stuff. And it is a graphic novel. It is an original graphic novel put out by Image called Savage Town.
Very cool.
It is written by Declan Shalvey, who's typically an artist. He's collaborated with Warren Ellis a bunch.
Scott Snyder.
A little bit. He does. He's done those backups in All-Star Batman.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a bunch. He's done a good amount of stuff for Marvel as well. He's been doing all the Punisher covers for Becky Cloonan's run on Punisher.
Which are great.
Oh, yeah. And he collaborates with colorist Jordi Belair.
Mm-hmm.
They both work together wonderfully. So he wrote this. Jordi colored it. And then the artist on here is Philip Barrett, who is an artist I haven't seen before, but he's worked on Matter and Where's Larry. And this is a crime comic, which I love.
Yeah.
I love the crime stuff.
Yeah.
And this takes place in Limerick City in Ireland, and it's kind of based on a true story around the turn of the millennium, which is such a weird phrase, but I guess it's apt, but it's still weird to hear being like...
It's been 17 years.
After. Yeah, being as old as we are, it's weird to hear turn of the millennium. What? It looks really cool. I'm excited to see Declan Shalvey, who has such a great grasp of visual storytelling, to see how he, you know, reinterprets that as being the writer for another artist. But it looks super cool. I'm always up for a noir crime story.
And it's a
story.
Graphic novel, so yeah, it's like you can just like read the beginning. Story.
So it's looking pretty great.
Very cool.
What is your second pick?
For me, it's an IDW book. We got Star Wars Adventures number 2. I loved the first issue. It made me so happy.
It's definitely a kid's book, but it's fun.
Well, yeah. Okay, so here's my thing on Star Wars. Like, I can't...
You don't hate it.
I can't stand Star Wars. The very mention of it makes me see red. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. But I am frustrated by Star Wars and the current state of things with the movies. I don't know what's going on with Star Wars anymore. I don't know where it rests in my heart, but Star Wars Adventures is the compass for me right now. Like, it's kids' stories. And that's what Star Wars is. It's for damn kids. And that's what it should be. It interprets so well. And not only that... But we have some of the best artists working on it. We have Derek Charm finishing up his two-part story in this issue. And then Elsa Charidier does an actual story in here. She did the gorgeous cover from issue number 1. She has a full story in here.
Elsa Charidier is one of my faves. Her
she's great.
Unstoppable Wasp,
mm-hmm.
A+.
Yeah, and so for her to work on a story in the Star Wars universe, I'm all about it.
One of my favorite things about it is that the main story in there is a Rey story.
Yeah, that's the one that Derek Charm does.
Mm-hmm.
Who writes that one? Kevin Scott, he wrote both stories in the last issue. One of them was an Obi-Wan Kenobi story. And this one that Elsa did, she co-wrote this with Pierre Collinet, whom I've never heard of, but...
Another French person.
But we got one story featuring Rey, and then we got another one dealing with what's looking like Leia Organa era rebellion with a bunch of rebel fighters. The art just looks gorgeous, so I'm down for it. Star Wars Adventures number 2 was my second pick this week. What's next for you, MJ?
My next one is Bug, The Adventures of Forager number 4.
Bug!
It's back after a little bit of break there, which is fine because... Michael and Laura Allred they're doing the art on all the books.
Seriously, they're busy. The
I'm just glad this one's back because I love it. This one involves Forager, of course, and this cast of characters he's acquired now in the last couple issues, and also Deadman. Brings in how Deadman was used in Kirby's Forever People.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in this robot body sort of thing.
Say what?
Yeah, it's real crazy. It's cool. Lee and Mike Allred write all the characters really well. It's so much fun. I can't recommend this comic enough. Bug number 4. What's your next pick?
Well, for me, I was going to pick Bug as well, but there's so many damn good comics out this week. I figured you can give that shout and I could focus on this one. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man number 4. Written by Mr. Chip Zdarsky. Art by Adam Kubert and colors by Jordi Belair. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man kind of brings Peter back to his roots. You know, hard luck case, kind of a doofus.
Oh, he's a doofus.
Oh, he's a total doofus. So is Chip Zdarsky, so he's like the perfect writer.
I love Chip.
I love him too. He's one of my favorite writers, and he's heavy on the humor, but he's got pathos too. And while the pathos hasn't really hit me as hard in this book as I wanted to yet...
Oh, the heart will reveal itself.
I am sure that it will. Just based on how Chip navigated the Marvel Universe during his Howard the Duck run with Joe Quinones. I have nothing but complete faith in the man. So him writing Spider-Man is a perfect fit, and I'm very excited to keep reading Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, number 4. MJ, what's next for you?
Well, my next pick is an Image book. It is Mirror by Emma Rios and Hui Lim. Mm-hmm. Mirror number 8. There's been like 5 months between when this issue came out and the last one came out in April.
Weren't they on a break?
No, this was mid-storyline.
Oh.
But it's okay. Emma Rios and Hui Lim, they're busy. And the art is beautiful, delicate watercolors. I'm cool if that takes a little bit of extra time. Yeah. But it is, I have a feeling I'm going to have a hard time remembering what happened in the last issue because it's a very introspective, meditative, quiet story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a little bit confused.
You might have to reread.
But it is some of the most beautiful comics you will see being published today. I highly recommend Mirror. I think this is like the third issue in on like the second storyline. It's real good. Mirror number 8.
My next pick is Black Hammer number 13 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Dean Ormston, colors by Dave Stewart. Black Hammer is an awesome book on its own. The fact that Jeff Lemire is strip mining all of comics lore, distilling it down to its purest essence and putting it back on the page with an artist like Dean Ormston, who's so characteristic and nuanced, just makes this book the perfect storm of story and art. It's comics without sounding too hyperbolic in its purest form, and I think that it has its best new series Eisner badge right here on the latest cover. Backs up my claim. So Black Hammer number 13 is my next pick this week. MJ, what's last for you?
All right, my last pick is the Star Wars Annual number 3, which is written by Jason Latour with art by Michael Walsh. I heard this described by the writer as being a diehard type story starring Princess Leia.
Hmm.
I'm super excited to read it, and I love Michael Walsh's art. He was on Secret Avengers for a while. He's done a couple Image series. He is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he will get the feel of a diehard-esque story set in the Star Wars universe really, really well.
I'm
super stoked to read it. What's your last pick?
All right, for me, it is Bloodshot Salvation number 1 from Valiant. It also happens to be the book I'm reviewing this week, so without further ado, let's just jump right into it.
All right, what's your elevator pitch for Bloodshot Salvation number 1?
All right, Jeff Lemire continues his sterling run on Valiant's Bloodshot with a new series featuring artwork by other Valiant luminaries such as Louis LaRosa, Miko Sueyan, and Brian Rebert. Also, we rarely ever get to review a Valiant book, so I'm calling shenanigans on that.
Why did you decide to read this book?
Lemire's Bloodshot series is one for the books. It's gripping, it's thrilling, it can be really, really violent, but it can also be really, really sweet. Oddly enough, and all these bits come together in Bloodshot Salvation number 1, largely thanks to its new series premise. Bloodshot, who's now living in Michigan, which I like as a Michigan boy, he's living as a man named Ray, he falls in love with a woman named Magic, and they have a kid. Magic has a secret ugly past that comes ripping into their happy lives, and without giving too much away, the story is set in two timelines, which is today, where Ray is the family man living in Michigan, and tomorrow, where their daughter is preteen and taking on the characteristics of her former mercenary father.
All right, well, what did you love about it?
The two timelines are illustrated by two separate artists, Louis LaRosa in present day and Miko Sueyan in the not-too-distant future. LaRosa has this painterly quality to his work. In fact, if I had to compare his stuff to another artist that we both really love, it would be Gene Ha. Like, they're very similar in styles. Mm. LaRosa plays with camera angles a lot more. He does fisheye effects every once in a while, which really work. He knows his math. He's really good at what he does. But he captures the quieter moments with these incredible close-ups that convey the intimacy and safety of Ray's new family life, which makes the story really land. And it gives this issue a sense of foreboding as Lemire shifts the story to a few years later, where Magic is on the lam with their daughter in the Minnesota wilderness, and they're running from some sort of coordinated Black Ops crew with neither Ray nor Bloodshot to be found. So it's dire, it feels severe, and it feels kind of scary too, and Miko Sueyan ramps up the action in these moments, and his work looks very much like Lee Bermejo's, and like Bermejo, Sueyan doesn't shy away from the fireworks. And in a book like Bloodshot, you gotta have fireworks.
Well, was there anything you didn't like?
Bloodshot Salvation was everything I needed in a new debut. I have zero complaints about it.
All right. Well, who would you recommend this book to and why?
Literally anyone who's looking for a solid superhero comic but wants to venture outside of the big two. Valiant's been publishing some of the best for years and years and years. I'm getting tired of saying this. If you haven't read any of their stuff, Change that now. Change your life. But their new Icons line, which also features Ninja K and Quantum and Woody, written by your pal Daniel Kibblesmith, is the perfect place to jump in.
Well, what's your score for Bloodshot Salvation number 1?
I gave Bloodshot Salvation number 1 a 9 out of 10.
Dang.
All right, MJ, what are you reviewing for us this week?
I am reviewing America number 7, written by Gabby Rivera, with art by Jen Bartel, Annie Wu, Ming Doyle, Odd Coach, and Joe Quinones with Joe Rivera, colors by Rachel Rosenberg and Jordan Gibson, and Jen Bartel, too, for her part.
And what's your elevator pitch?
Well, America Chavez has discovered that the star-punching luchador mysteriously following her every move is actually her grandmother. Mm. And in this issue, they get to have a serious heart-to-heart traversing the past, both far and near.
And why did you decide to read this book?
Well, America is a series I've been digging since it debuted earlier this year, and of course I was going to read this issue. It certainly helps that four of my favorite artists have contributed pages to it, and that it's a comic chock full of hecka talented ladies, and also Joe Quinones on that final page. Mm. And his cover for this issue, with its homage to Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, is A+.
And what did you love about it?
Well, this issue is a history lesson, with America's newly discovered Abuela Madramar retelling their people's origins and past. A different artist does a different section of Madramar's reminiscences on their ancestral plane, each very fitting for their story. Mm-hmm. Jen Bartel's magical jewel-toned colors are breathtaking in her four-page segment that opens the issue. Bartel doesn't do interiors very often, and this sequence was primed and perfect just for her, centered around these two beautiful celestial entities creating a planet. Mm-hmm. And it's gorgeous.
Plays to her strength.
Mm-hmm. Annie Wu and Ming Doyle both have separate sequences as well. Wu's sequence showing America experiencing her mom's first meeting, and Doyle's showing America explaining to her grandmother what she went through as an orphaned child. Odd Coach's sequence has the most emotionally resonant imagery, depicting America's mothers as she is being born, with a page that beautifully parallels the earlier galactic creation of Planeta Fortuna that Jen Bartel did.
And was there anything about it you didn't like?
Nope. Dug it all. It was a beautiful, deep delve of an issue.
We're pretty easy to please this week. Who would you
recommend? Comics.
Yeah. Who would you recommend this book to and why?
To everyone. It's an energetically fun series with a full beating heart. And this issue shows just how much heart it has.
Very cool. So what would you give America number 7?
I give it an 8 out of 10.
Every week we take to social media to ask you, our listeners, the pressing questions on our minds. And this week's question, if you could only take one comic book with you, series, mini, or book, or whatever, to a desert island, what would it be? And we asked, and holy cow, did you answer. MJ, start us off.
This was a very popular topic.
It was.
Thank you all so much for replying.
Oh, thank you.
We loved seeing these responses.
It was a lot of fun.
We had a lot of people saying Sandman.
Yes.
So many people said Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you guys all agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good amount of people saying All-Star Superman and Planetary, Transmet. Hunter Ives on Twitter, which is at HMIVES, said DC New Frontier, which I totally agree with. Kevin Mellon, who's at KMELLON, said The Puma Blues, which is a series I hadn't really heard of much, but it's got art by Michael Zulli.
Oh, very
and
cool.
And Michael Zulli, always good.
Well, over on Facebook, Steve Orlando said Flex Mentallo, no question, which
yeah.
I'm 100% behind that. Mava Fernandez said, honestly, Ghost World. Humor, sadness, realness. It reminds me I can always be and do me regardless of how much anxiety I have doing it, if that makes sense. Yes, Mava, it makes perfect sense. Thanks for sharing.
And Ron Wimberly over on Facebook said Domu, or Hanashi Panashi. And he also said, surprised at how conservative / Western most of these answers are, which is true. This is mostly like American superhero stuff. And I don't know. I wish it was a little bit more universal. It's definitely given me some manga, etc., that I really do want to read to expand my own horizons.
Sure, absolutely. Over on Facebook again, Andrew Elia, hello Andrew, said, would it continue magically? If yes, Batman. If it's a limited run and has an end, Superman, Secret Identity. And then he cheekily threw in a hashtag, today is Tuesday. But joke's on you, Andrew, we're recording on Wednesday.
Jeffrey S. Mueller on Twitter, who's at The Mighty Jerd, said, my Walt Simonson Thor omnibus, which, you know, if you're on a desert island and you're bringing an omnibus that also works as a deadly weapon to, you know, like, hunt for birds or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then at Goats of Doom said the funny Justice League books, which is the Giffen, DeMatteis, McGuire stuff, right. Which is excellent. There were a few people that mentioned that one.
Over on Facebook, we had two For We Three, which is another quietly Morrison joint. That was from Ian McGinty and Donald Cardenas. Hey guys, We Three is definitely one of my all-time favorites. I don't know if I'd want to read it right now, but it is a solid book. Nice pick.
There were a couple people that mentioned current ongoing Image series is like Saga and Wicked and Divine, with the caveat that, of course, it would have to be somehow maybe dropped off via Eagle to the to the island for the you know, ongoing issues as they get published.
Right.
Two Sheds Erickson, who's at the Chris Erickson, said Starman. There were a couple people who mentioned Starman, which is a series I haven't finished. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Our very own Don Alsafi mentioned it over on Facebook, James Robinson Starman.
And we had so many replies that were for The Invisibles.
Yeah.
We had Ray Fox reply that one, and then tons of other people. At Morgan Y. Evans agreed as well, and there were probably, I think, three more people.
Morrison's all over this, actually.
Yep. Everybody loves him.
That's right. And our last one for this week, Mary Bilek over on Facebook said, milk and cheese, dairy products gone bad, hardcover edition, so I could have them all with me. Nice pick, Mary. And thank you, everyone, for responding to us. Thanks for being patient with us. Watch out for that hashtag in 2 weeks, Casual Wednesdays. MJ, before we close out the episode, did you want to give a shout-out?
Yeah, I just want to give a little shout-out to Little Miss Marceline,
okay,
who was my cat. We had to sadly put her to sleep. That was part of the reason that we didn't record. If you listened real closely on earlier episodes, you could probably hear her yelling.
Yeah, she was always yelling.
Because we would sometimes have to lock her in a separate room because she would be so bonkers running around.
Well, she gets so mad because we weren't paying attention to her all of a sudden.
Yeah, she'd get real mad, and she would just kind of howl a bunch.
She always reminded me of Calvin in Calvin and Hobbes, like when he'd walk around like banging pots together, like, "I am so great." That's like what she was like.
Yep, yep. So she would get kind of loud sometimes when we'd record, but sometimes she'd be really quiet and she would just sit on my lap, like through the whole episode and just not make any noise and just enjoy our company. But she, it's weird to record not having her here and not having to, worry about, oh God, I wish she would shut up over there. So, Marcelina, we miss you.
We miss you. Our unofficial third host.
Yeah.
This one's for Marceline. And that's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 37-episode archive over on iTunes. Rate and subscribe. Tell us how we're doing. We missed you. Or search Casual Wednesdays over at doomrocket.com. And look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
At @MollyJane_K.
And that's it. So until Darkseid starts wearing those cute purple leggings again, I'm Jared, that's MJ, and from all of us here at doomrocket.com, have a great new comic book day.